and be the one on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. Hello, this is Dowdy. So we've got the Superintendent of Thames Valley Police from Milton Keynes with us on the show this morning. Hi, Jeds.
Hey, good morning.
I'm not going to say your surname because I can never say it.
Cariello.
Cariello. I will forget that in 5 minutes.
I'm sure you will.
So, loads and loads of questions for you. You haven't been on, have you, for a little while?
No, just before Christmas, wasn't it?
We did. I think so.
Around Celebrity Just Dance, and we did a little bit of talking around that, and we did some work around, or some conversation around lead up to Christmas and the impact upon policing across the city.
Yeah. So we've had a number of questions in. Some of these we touched on last time, so we've run through as many of these as we can. The first question that we had was from Julie, talking about people smoking cannabis. And I've got to admit, even walking around the city centre here, from time to time, you do smell it.
Yes, indeed, and it is quite concerning because certainly if you live somewhere and that's going on near where you live and you've got children playing, it's not very good. It's slightly different when you're walking around the city because it's difficult to sort of find out where that sources of the cannabis, but certainly in terms of Julie's question, I would urge her to report it to her local neighbourhood officers. If she feels a little bit concerned about doing that because of a fear of where she lives, she can do it anonymously via Crime Stoppers. And you know, certainly we would act on that information. We would look into it and see where it's coming from, who the people are that have been identified as being responsible, and then ultimately working with the local authority, we would either carry out some prevention work or some enforcement work, and if the need is there, then things that can follow that are things like eviction if it's a council-owned property, or subsequent securing a warrant and enforcing that. So there's lots that can be done, but without the information coming in the first place, it's really difficult to be able to act on it.
Right, so if someone telephones 101, it will actually be logged and build up the data for your force to take the appropriate action.
Absolutely, and if Julie, for example, wanted to report something, she would have to indicate whether she wanted to be visited or spoken to, and then somebody would be in contact with her to make the arrangements to speak to her.
All right, and generally, is this a massive problem?
Not one that's been brought to my attention, to be fair, but I accept that Julie's clearly got an issue where she lives, only if it's not where she lives, she either knows somebody that does, and if it's causing them that much concern, then you know, I would urge you to call in and report it.
All right, well, we're going to be coming on to Jimmy. It's In Solvik and Intoxicated on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. Hello, this is Dowdy. So we've got Jez with us this morning, Superintendent for Thames Valley Police here in Milton Keynes. Jimmy's asked a question about Amazon selling keys that can break into builders' vans. Is this something that you're aware of?
No, I must say, Darren, when I saw this, it was the first time I've heard of him. You know, normally I would say that we do tend to get vans targeted at various points during the course of the year. When that occurs, we act as robustly as we possibly can. But the one way to stop it is by not having tools in the back of the van. And I think people should take some responsibility and make sure that they don't give a would-be criminal the opportunity to commit the crime.
Okay. I know from talking to a number of local businesses, they've said that generally the theft of tools, not just from vans, but also from premises as well, seems to be a major concern.
I mean, it clearly would be if you were the victim of that sort of crime because it impacts upon your livelihood. Generally speaking, if we do have anything in relation to tools, it tends to come from vehicles, so vans that are parked up. There are the very odd occasion where factory premises will get targeted and tools taken, but generally speaking, it's more from vans that are parked with tools in the back.
Okay, and is there anything more that people can do apart from taking them out? Because I think a comment was made there is that even if the tools aren't in the van, it's obviously the damage to the vehicle and, you know, just the amount of work that it's going to take to obviously get that done, possibly an insurance quote.
Yeah, I mean, you can never stop anybody targeting a vehicle of any sort. You can try and make some prevention or give some prevention advice and people take heed of that advice. People don't randomly target vans unless they think there's generally something inside the, so just some marketing, even a note on the car, there's no tools in the back of the van, would probably put somebody off. But I think these type of things are very much around common sense, people just using a little bit of common sense and taking some precautions to reduce the likelihood of them becoming a victim.
Right, well, we're going to be talking to you next about parking in disabled spaces. The Weekend and Daft Punk, Starboy on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. So we've got Jez, the Chief of Police here in Milton Keynes. So Ruth's been on asking what the law is on people parking in disabled spaces. I guess there's a difference between if it's a disabled space in a public area versus a commercial organisation like Tesco's.
Yeah, and Dan, that's my understanding of it. I mean, enforcement of this sort of stuff handed over to the council some time ago, so as police officers we generally don't enforce parking regulations. The specific question asked by Ruth related to Tesco, I think, and the onus is very much on them to enforce their regulations, because it is a sort of, although it's open to the public, it's a private sort of arrangement. Within the sort of public arenas across the city, that tends to fall to the local authority and the enforcement officers who will issue tickets, and they tend to be very, very good in terms of the number of tickets that they issue. From a police perspective, we rarely get involved in enforcing traffic legislation around parking. We tend to get involved if it's sort of an unnecessary obstruction where we've got a power to do something, but generally speaking, most of it is handed over to the local authority.
Would that be something like where cars parked on the pavement and people like with mobility scooters and buggies and that can't get past?
And often we do get reports of those, but you know, hopefully people will appreciate that when calls like that come in, it tends not to be one of the sort of priorities because it's not an emergency, and very often when we actually get there, the said vehicle has disappeared. So even if that's the case, if it tends to be around schools and things like that, the chances are it's probably a certain individual, a certain number of individuals that will do that regularly. So it's vitally important that people contact the local officers, because if nothing else, we have that information that at some point we can build a bit of a pattern.
And I know that generally the emergency services do target areas where there is a problem, like where I live, there's people parking on the pavements and you can't get ambulances and fire engines and all that through, and every so often you see notices on cars, you know, where they're warning people that this is, you know, could be life-threatening to an individual.
Yeah, indeed, and I think it's not just that. You know, if there's an accident caused as a result of something like that, then people flag that up, and it's not just the police, it's a local authority, and other people will work together to address those, or certainly raise awareness of it, and where that means enforcing some legislation, then that's done. It's just in terms of the frequency of it and the perpetrators. Unless you catch them there and then, it becomes quite difficult to actually do anything retrospectively. But certainly around schools and areas of high public congregation, it's really important if it's causing a public safety issue that people report it. And then whether we deal with it or not, we would certainly be in contact with the local authority and make sure that there's some operation or initiative done that would look at enforcement around that.
All right, excellent. I know that we touched on this last time. In a second, we're going to talk to you about the reports of gangs in certain areas in Milton Keynes. We'll do that after some more great music, which is on the way for you next. Bruno Mars, 24K Magic, Major Lazer and Fuse ODG before that. So we've got the Superintendent for Thames Valley Police for Milton Keynes, Jez, with us this morning answering your questions. So we touched on this last time you was in, and that was people reporting about gangs and gang culture in some of the estates. And I know that you've done some work yourself and with the MPs to meet some of the public in these estates and actually try and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, as part of the Community Safety Partnership, I think I mentioned before that they commissioned a piece of work which looked at whether gangs existed in Milton Keynes, so an academic piece of work that was based on evidence that fell very much in line with national direction and national definitions. And the findings in that report were that we've got no gangs in Milton Keynes. And there's got to be a difference in terms of what a gang is per Home Office definition to what people's perception of a gang. And whether people want to accept it or not, a group of people hanging around on a street corner wearing hoodies does not necessarily constitute a gang. There's all sorts of criteria which will illustrate the affiliation to a gang. That said, you know, wherever there's an issue being raised, and Fisher Mead is the example that you're talking about, I attended a public meeting with one of the MPs and we addressed some concerns of the local community, and we had a very useful and interesting debate. There were some good points made by members of the community, there were some good points put across by police and the MP, and we agreed a common way forward in terms of working together to try and just build some cohesion among people within the estate. And I think often that's probably where the issue is. There's people who don't get on with groups of people, and it's about building relationships and using the right people to act as mediators and harness those relationships so that people who live in an area basically get on.
Excellent. Right, we're going to be talking to you a little bit later on in the hour about the use of mobile phones in vehicles. Also, as well, about the way that crime is reported. A few people have questioned some of the stats that are produced. So we'll talk about that. Let's continue with this, though. This is Sybil. Sybil, When I'm Good and Ready on the beat of MK, this is MKFM. On our Facebook page, we had a number of questions. And as we put at the top of our Facebook page, that if there was a question that was setting out a personal agenda or if it involved an individual or a current case, obviously we would need to hide that for legal reasons. But there was a number of comments on there, Jez, about possible police corruption, about the figures and stats being massaged. As regards as the reporting of crime and how it's logged, maybe talk us through that process and the safeguards in place to make sure that when the stats come out that they are accurate.
Okay, I mean, in terms of any reported crime or incident, the first protocol is it gets logged on a system when the call is actually made, and then an assessment is made of whether that does relate to a crime or an incident, and an officer will invariably get dispatched, whether that be through an emergency response, through a more slower time response, or something that is done by an arrangement at a later time. But that audit trail starts from the initial receipt of the call, there are subsequent processes that people follow in terms of recording statements, crime reports, incidents, and other bits and pieces which are not relevant. They are scrutinised locally within Milton Keynes, but also at force level across Thames Valley by people at headquarters. And then the force, like many other forces across the country, regularly get inspected by Her Majesty's Inspectorate Constabulary, who will check, amongst other things, those audit processes to make sure that incidents and crimes are ethically recorded. And, you know, from a Thames Valley point of view, Darren, we do really, really well in those inspections because there's been such a massive push for many years now about ethical recording. So, you know, in terms of statistics that are published, it's as true as possible in terms of the reflection of what's going on across the force.
And I guess it's one of these things where, you know, obviously nothing to do with Thames Valley Police as well, but, you know, more recently you've had the reports of Hillsborough and stuff like that, and I guess that gives an opportunity just to review the processes across the country.
Yeah, and I think if you look at things like Hillsborough, which was a long time ago, the recording practices are very, very different to what they were then. And, you know, God forbid there's ever another Hillsborough, but if there was in the current climate, the way that things are recorded, I think would be much more subject to scrutiny and more readily available, and those who were involved in it would be held to account in a way that they should be held to account.
And as regards as corruption in the police force, how is that process kind of dealt with if there's allegations against officers?
Well, any member of the public reserves a right to make a complaint against a police officer around the conduct or the service that they've received. That complaint will be recorded and an assessment will be made by our Professional Standards Department, who are an internal department who are responsible for investigating those allegations. They will make an assessment of whether it's something that can be dealt with locally, or in the more serious cases, it'll be something that they would pick up and investigate. They're an independent group within the organisation, and they are very much there to make sure that the organisation is as ethical as possible. It follows the code of ethics, which I've mentioned before, and any wrongdoing is identified and dealt with appropriately.
Right, so it's not dealt with on a local level behind closed doors. There's actually
full
transparent procedure to make sure that these things are dealt with properly.
No, and Darren, you know, nationally there's a big drive around this because if police officers are not doing what they should be doing, that ultimately impacts upon reputation and has a serious impact upon the public confidence. So it's absolutely right and proper that any allegation is investigated the way it should be investigated, and it's done properly. And generally speaking, when a decision is made on the outcome, it tends to be the right decision. And if it's not, there's an appeals process via the Independent Police Complaints Commission, and they will make an assessment of whether the force has acted appropriately.
Right, excellent. Well, we're going to be talking to you next about the use of mobile phones in cars. We'll do that next. Ollie Murs and Grow Up on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. So we've got Chief Inspector of Thames Valley Police, Jez, with us this morning. Let's talk about the use of mobile phones then in cars. Obviously, this has been on the news quite a bit recently. And you do see it, don't you? Taxi drivers, you know, you see people in lorries. And again, this is something that the whole country is trying to crack down on.
Indeed, although you demoted me there, Darren, but
sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one of the big things that a massive contributor to accidents, along with drink and drugs, not wearing seatbelts and speeding. Many people have heard in the news recently that the legislation is soon to change around the enforcement of it in terms of penalties and points on licence, even discussing for multiple offenders banning from driving. It is something that is a massive contributor to serious accidents, and as a result of it, where possible, it gets enforced. I mean, recent cases, the lorry driver who filmed himself on the motorway, you know, he caused the sad death of, I think it was four people, for being on his mobile phone. I mean, ridiculous. So it is something that needs to be enforced. It's something that, where possible, we try and enforce it. It's something with the new legislation that I'm sure will be a focus of Force Wider National Operations. And, you know, it's gone past the education aspect for me now. People know that they shouldn't be doing it. And, you know, I know there were some comments about police officers using phones. If I catch police officers using phones, I'll be dealt with appropriately.
So even a policeman that's on duty in a police car, if it's an emergency, they can't be physically using the phone?
Absolutely not. You know, we have a radio facility with a hands-free capability. That's what people should be communicating on if they need to do that. Generally speaking, there's more than one person in the car. One person can use a phone while the other one drives. You know, that's exactly the type of thing that's unacceptable. We can't allow our officer to do that.
So would that be a sackable offence?
It probably wouldn't be a sackable offence, right. But again, it goes on the number of repeated incidents. Is it a pattern of behaviour? Is it a course of conduct? Or is it a one-off silly mistake by somebody? But, you know, it would be wholly wrong of the organisation, the police service, to allow officers to break the law, yet enforce it with members of the public. It just doesn't work like that.
OK. And from the figures that you see, is this a generational problem, or is it across the board?
No, I mean, stats-wise, there's not very much that comes out or right. that I get to see. But, you know, you talk about it when you drive down the road, you see virtually every day.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, you know, when I see people in Milton Keynes, when I'm in my own car, it's not just young people or middle-aged people or older people. It's a cross-section of people, even lorry drivers, bus drivers. Yeah. You know, it's people who drive for a living ought to know better. And I just think, you know, there's an awful lot of awareness gone out around it, raising the profile of it. There's been some high-profile cases in the news which have resulted in the sad death of other people. The new change in legislation from the 1st of March will definitely result in some kind of enforcement operation, and people will be actively targeted for it.
Yeah, the worry for me is that I passed my test in the days when there wasn't mobile phones, yeah. Not making myself sound, you know, as old as I possibly could. But obviously, with the younger generation, they're used to the mobile phone being strapped to them every minute of the day, and I know that it's a concern for some people that it's like the next generation of drivers, you know, that's going to be an even bigger problem.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but maybe in terms of people learning to drive and the tests that they need to sit and the written and the practical tests, maybe they could incorporate some work around phones and the use of phones, as well as speed and the other things that contribute to fatal deaths.
So as far as you know, is that not really covered then at the minute?
I don't know, Darren. Right, okay. I'm a lot longer than you learning to drive, to be fair.
Yeah. Okay, no worries. All right, we'll be back with you in a bit. Let's do this. This is Years and Years and Shine. Years and Years and Shine on the beat of MK, this MKFM. News at 12, fast approaching, then we'll be back with Jez for the rest of your questions. Little Mix and Becky Hill on the way as well. The latest news and travel is next.
Making your workday go faster with Darren.
MKFM.
Becky Hill and False Alarm, Little Mix and Touch before that. We'll be back with Jez after this on MKFM. Rudimental. I'm waiting all night on the beat of MK, it's MKFM. So we're with Jez today from Thames Valley Police. Remind me again of your official title, because I always get it wrong.
I'm the local police area commander for Milton Keynes.
All right, Bex has been on then asking about harassment and the amount of notices that are handed out.
Yeah, in terms of our approach to harassment, which is a national approach, to prove an harassment, you need to prove a course of conduct. And invariably, when somebody reports them to the police, that is the end of the first course of conduct. So what happens is, when the call's made, it gets recorded, an officer will get dispatched at some point, as I said earlier, whether that be through an immediate response, a more slower time response, or by an appointment. And they will formally record the harassment as a crime or a crime-related incident. And there is a basic level of investigation carried out at that time. So a statement or a written entry is made in the officer's pocket notebook around the allegation, and if the officer deems it appropriate, i.e. there is a course of conduct, they can issue a notice to the alleged perpetrator, which basically outlines the fact that the allegation has been made, what the nature of the allegation is, and strongly advising that any future behaviour is stopped, because it will ultimately lead in an arrest.
Right, so one of the things that Bex was saying, why is there so many handed out in Milton Keynes?
We, as I said, are victim-led. We right. will respond to the reports of harassment, and we will deal with them appropriately. There's no science to it. If somebody reports being harassed, then we will investigate it as we would do any other crime.
All right, excellent. We'll be back with you after this from Sean Paul. Sean Paul and No Liar on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. So we've got Jez with us from Thames Valley Police with us today. This hour of the show is recorded because obviously we didn't want to tie up too much of Jez's time today. But Zia's been on asking about people that are partying outside until like the early hours of the morning. What's the law as regards this?
Well, it depends on what they're doing, of course. I mean, it sounds like from a question that she's got some concerns around some of the areas, and she wants some information about how to proceed with making a complaint because she seems scared. I think that can be done via the local authority, it can be done to the police, or it could be done anonymously via Crime Stoppers. You know, there's other things that we would look at doing. Is she the only person who's complaining about it? Is this a pattern of behaviour from a certain house? Do we have any information about that individual? And there's things that can be done. But again, it relies very much on that information being forthcoming for us to make an assessment of it, and then we can act on it if appropriate.
Obviously, this time of year, there's not so much, you know, going on in people's gardens, but certainly, you know, where I live, spring, summertime, you know, you have got dogs that are kind of like, you know, in the garden till hours of the night. You have got people out there drinking and making a noise. Generally, what is the law around it? Is it after a certain time people are supposed to be indoors, or isn't there really a law around it?
There isn't really a law. Right. It falls under sort of the noise legislation, which is an environmental health issue. But again, you know, for it to be something like that, it would have to be over a prolonged period of time and very persistent in its nature. And I think the things that you're talking about tend to be when the weather's a lot better than what it is, and or there's an occasion where people would be partying. And sometimes, whether people accept it or not, those sorts of things happen. You know, over the summer period, we regularly get sent to noisy parties and we ask people to curb the noise. If we think there's an issue that is protracted, then we'll refer it to the local authority and they will take some action going forwards. But if this is a pattern of behaviour in relation to a number of other issues relating to antisocial behaviour or nuisance, then it's important that people report it, because then we can build up a picture.
Right, we had a number of questions about the general response from the police in Milton Keynes. We'll cover that next after this from Calvin Harris. This is Feel So Close. That's Calvin Harris and Feel So Close on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. So we had a few comments on our Facebook page, just people suggesting that then when they've reported something to the police, they feel as if it hasn't been followed up correctly, or they've had a community officer show up. You know, generally, what's your feeling as regards as the way that police respond to reported crime in Milton Keynes?
This is one of the things that was raised at Fishermead when I went there with the MP. I mean, there are basically three levels of police in response, if you like, the way we deliver service. We deliver the sort of response function, which is people driving around in police cars. We've got an investigative function, which is a sort of slower time, the more complex stuff around vulnerability and serious crime. And then we've got the neighbourhood element of it, which is locally based officers that are geographically based within our neighbourhoods. The things that we're talking about probably fall into the sort of neighbourhood one, where they cover a geographical area. You know, everyone who reports something should get some feedback from somebody, even if that's a telephone call to say we've looked into it and there's nothing further that can be done around it. And if that's not happening, then it's really important that's fed back through the appropriate channels to me, and that would be through local councillors, to the local neighbourhood officers, to the supervisors, and I'll look into it. It's really difficult to talk generally about things like this, Darren, because everybody will have had their own experience of it. Some will be good, some will be not so good. And ultimately, I said it before, you know, we are a public service. We deliver our service that should not only meet but exceed customer requests or expectations, and where it falls foul of that, you know, I want to know about, see if there's anything that we can do better next time.
So generally, when obviously everyone's under budget constraints, and you look at what's going on in Milton Keynes Hospital, and even Joe Harrison has said himself that he's relying on a lot of goodwill from his people, is that the case with the police? Officers working a lot of extra hours to try and deal with the demand? Are you relying, you know, quite a bit on the community officers, or...
No, I mean, we've had to change the way we work. We've had to become more efficient to deliver a better service with less. And part of that is about some internal changes that we've done around our structure, some changes to the way that some of our processes operate to make us more efficient. I've not got an infinite pot of resource, and we have to prioritise. We tend to do that around threat, risk, harm, vulnerability, and that means sometimes people don't get the service they would expect as quickly as what they get it. But I go back to the point I made earlier, I would expect everybody to receive some kind of update, and if that's not happening, then, you know, I want to know about it, really.
Okay, so you mentioned a number of ways that people can do that, obviously on Twitter as well. Is that something that people can do?
Yeah, I mean, I won't respond to individuals on Twitter, but if there's an issue that I need to, then I will do. And certainly, if nothing else, I'll look into it, or get someone to look into it and get somebody back. I mean, I think a couple of the examples have made specific reference to neighbourhood officers, messages being left. you know, my commitment to the public of Milton Keynes is bear with us. A neighbourhood officer should get in contact with you if there's a message left. Like I say, if nothing else, just to say thank you very much for your message. We've looked into it. And I'm sorry, there's nothing else we can do. Or with an outcome of what they've done. Because it's only right and proper if someone takes the time to report something, they should receive a level of feedback.
All right, I'll be back with you one last time in just a little bit. We're talking about the general picture of crime in Milton Keynes. We'll do that after some more great music, which is on the way next. Little Mick, shout out to my ex, Cash Cash, before that, a millionaire on the beat of MK. This is MKFM. So we've got Superintendent Jez with us. You are the area commander for the Thames Valley Police in Milton Keynes. Have I demoted you again?
No, that's absolutely right.
Excellent. Let's talk generally then about crime in Milton Keynes. Even at the radio station here, there's not a week past where you don't hear about a serious story as regards as a robbery, you know, an attack, even your own offices or people being attacked. Generally, what is the picture in Milton Keynes as regards as crime?
Okay, well, generally, I think we've got a pretty good picture. You know, Milton Keynes, and I say it everywhere I go, is a safe place to live, work and visit. Robbery does, for obvious reasons, raise some concern. Just to give you some idea of numbers, since April of last year, we've had 106, which is about 10 a month, which is actually 18 less than the previous year, same period of the previous year. And our outcome rate in terms of identifying and dealing with perpetrators is over 26%. So in terms of where we stand in Thames Valley, that's a really good picture. The very nature of robbery is quite nasty because it's the use of force to steal, basically. And invariably, when that's somebody being attacked, which is not a nice experience. But in terms of the overall numbers, it's not as bad as what people would think. And certainly in terms of the picture, it's showing a decreasing trend on the same time the previous year.
Right, okay. And as regards as any other stats?
Yeah, I mean, I've got whatever you want. What would you like?
No, just give us a general picture, because obviously that's robbery.
Okay, burglaries, we're showing a slight increase on the previous year, but again, we average 1.5 burglaries a day.
Right.
And if you put that into context of the growth of Milton Keynes over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I think that's a pretty phenomenal achievement. Vehicle crime is showing a reduction significantly on the previous year of 20%. Vehicle interference, theft from vehicles showing a 6% reduction, which again is really good. Shoplifting showing a reduction. In terms of our demands, though, I said it before, that 80% of what we do is actually non-crime related.
Right.
You know, we're talking about a very small picture of what we actually do, the crime side of it. Most of what we do tends to be around non-crime domestic abuse. Missing people is a significant issue for us, and supporting vulnerable people, whether that be adult or children.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to you coming in again.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time today. We've covered quite a bit of stuff. And again, Jez will be on the show very soon. So keep an eye on our Facebook page, MKFM Radio, and we'll do this again very soon. Thanks for coming in, Jess.
Thank you.
All right, let's continue with this.